Humans are naturally set to with the improvement attitude. So we were born with this attitude inside because we wanted to improve our life and so on. The same sentence or the same word is understood differently in Italy, in France, in Sweden, in Poland. So you really need to invest a lot into the communication and be sure that the messages, the basic messages, are reaching the people.
Welcome to KPI Fireside. Our mission is simple: to improve companies and to improve careers through continuous improvement. In every episode, we explore the spark, the moment, the mindset, or the method that ignites real change. Whether you're just starting out or leveling up, you'll find the insights and inspiration to fuel your next improvement. Welcome back to KPI Fireside, a continuous improvement podcast. I am your host, Keith Norris. Our guest today is Luca Giovanni Guadagnulo. Hopefully I said that pretty close to correct.
It's difficult also for Italians, so don't worry.
Super difficult for me also. So Luca is a seasoned management consultant and lean transformation operational excellence expert. Over the years, he's developed deep expertise in helping organizations simplify processes, eliminate waste, and align people around continuous improvement. On top of that, Luca is deeply passionate about people, leadership, and culture, believing that transformation is not just about tools, but about unlocking human potential. Today, we'll dive into how Luca measures and drives performance in complex environments, what KPIs matter most, how to overcome resistance, and what it takes to sustain change over the long run. Welcome, Luca.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to speak and share my experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it was Dave C. that connected us, so I'm happy that he did.
Yeah.
Where are you located geographically today?
Geographically, I'm located north of Milan, so north of Italy, between Milan and Varese, so on the Switzerland, towards Switzerland board. So wonderful. Gallarate, precisely. So maybe you know Malpensa Airport?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I live 15 kilometers away from Malpensa Airport. So.
Well, on the topic of Italy, this has been a really interesting trip for me to come over here and see some just really amazing things, and has given me definitely a greater appreciation for how things evolve over time, particularly like the engineering feats that I've seen over here. Obviously I've been in tunnels before, but the tunnels in Northern Italy are just massive and they're everywhere.
Right.
I had to go and watch a YouTube video on how are Italian tunnels made.
Yeah. When I was in Parque Hennepin, I used to make hoses for the tunneling machines.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I've been visiting some of them sometimes because of quality issues. So I know them
yeah,
quite
that's
well.
It's so interesting. And now we're down in Venice, and I've looked into a little bit of just how Venice was built and how they built it up from the water, and just the architecture and infrastructure, and how just it's so interesting to me as you travel and see how differently things are done and how things evolve. You know, whether it's electricity or road or transportation or just trash collection in Venice, for example, is an interesting process to watch.
I agree.
To get started here, we like to have a little segment we call the spark. And I'm curious, Luca, if there was a time in your career, your evolution, when that spark turned on for you in this continuous improvement or lean discipline.
Well, I've been through different sparks. But anyway, the first one is back to 2000 when I was appointed as a quality manager at the refrigeration plant here in Italy for Whirlpool, warm home appliances. So I was appointed as a quality manager. This was my first role as a managerial role. And I was taking over a kind of old organization where the focus was mainly on detecting errors, mistakes at the end of the assembly lines, and very little time spent on the processes. So I was brought into the plant, a new concept, new TQM, Total Quality Management Principles, and started to work systematically on continuous improvement activities. So instead of checking the defects at the end of the line, working upfront to remove defects, to correct problems and so on. So that was when I systematically approached the continuous improvement philosophies and so on. and techniques. So this was 2000, so 25 years ago.
That was at Parker Hannifin?
No, that was a Whirlpool Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, we have one of my colleagues here was working at Whirlpool in the US, and that's where he got his introduction, you could say, to continuous improvement.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah, Whirlpool was a big and still big is a big family, so lots of people everywhere. And this is where I was, let's say, also, if you want to see a previous milestone, so as part of the Operational Excellence Program, Whirlpool Operational Excellence Program, I took the Six Sigma Black Belt certification just before to be appointed as a quality manager. So, and this was another, let's say, in my opinion, key milestone, because this was setting up my DNA around DMAIC or PDCA approach. So plan, do, check, act.
So you got introduced to the Black Belt program there at Whirlpool as part of the company offering, part of that structure.
It was part of the Operational Excellence Program Whirlpool was promoting. I was, when I was there, I was, after 2-3 years I was working in Whirlpool, I got this opportunity. And this was another, let's say, aha moment when I started to dig into the process variation capabilities and so on. So this was impressive. But at that time was only, let's say, was a training. I was doing some projects. Then when I took over the quality manager role, then I saw the opportunity to actually utilize all this knowledge and information and tools as well. So this was really something that was, let's say, fixing all these knowledge and so on. So I would say this was, I'm grateful to Whirlpool for this as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm always curious how people get their introduction to this discipline. And, you know, certain people seem to be drawn to it and, you know, become consultants like yourself and move, you know, from different organizations. So after Whirlpool, where did you go next?
In Whirlpool, after the, let's say, couple of years of in a quality management position, the same plant was selected as the Lean program, selected as a Lean pilot for Europe. So it was the pilot plant for the Lean manufacturing. And this is where when I was exposed to Lean. So in 2002, I was exposed to Lean, and I was so excited about Lean philosophy and culture and approach. That they gave me the opportunity to become the Lean Program Manager for Europe in Whirlpool. So this was from 2002 to 2006. So that then led this implementation through Europe. So after the pilot in the first Italian plant, I was rolling out the program in all the different plants across Europe, across EMEA. So there was also South Africa involved in this program. And I was really, let's say, I had the privilege to have Professor Peter Hines as from Lean Enterprise Research Institute in UK as a mentor. He was the mentor of the program for Europe, and I had basically one-to-one coaching experience with him. And this was another jump start on lean principles, concepts, and all the philosophy behind. So this was how I came into the lean quality first and lean later on knowledge and as well experience.
You said that you were really drawn to lean from the beginning. Do you remember what it was? What it was at that, you know, is that those early stages that drew you into the discipline?
The early stages were basically we were creating the lean network within all the plants. So I was in charge of a small team, central team that was coordinating activities all around Europe. I had 4 people reporting to me, 5 then when we also started to work into Poland and Czech Republic as well. And basically I had people reporting to me, and in each location, we created the lean coordinator, which was kind of local facilitator, and started to deploy value stream mapping, training on tools, and do also some activities in the shop floor. So making transformations, implementing lean tools. We were also relying on some local consultant. Of course, at that time, we had no, the people to take over all this job. So we were relying on local consultant or consultant brought in from outside. In Poland, I came across Marek Piantowski, which was a guy from Canada, originally from Poland. So it was in the past, it was in Toyota as an instructor and so on. And it was impressive. I learned in the shop floor, lean, really hands-on. So in the game.
It sounds like you've been involved in some pretty large rollouts. Do you remember like the number of locations that were represented by that?
Yeah, 9 locations across Europe. So
yeah, that's I would imagine that it's probably a lot of lessons that you learned through that experience of what works and also maybe what doesn't. Do you have a few examples of things that you learned from that experience?
Well, the most impressive learning is that the same sentence or the same word is understood differently in Italy, in France, in Sweden, in Poland. So you really need to invest a lot into the communication and be sure that the messages, the basic messages are reaching the people. So this was impressive and different culture, different approach. But in the end, so lean was aligning everyone around the same, the same direction.
That's interesting. Yeah, particularly when you're speaking different languages, you know, and you're working with somebody who's maybe speaking as a second language, communicating respect with the words that you use can be so much different. The words that you use can come across, you know, so much more assertively than perhaps you intend them when you're not super comfortable with the language. So I think that's an interesting.
Fully agree.
Yeah, tendency to a good thing to focus on is that respect element.
Yeah, talking to colleagues, U.S. colleagues, they said they rarely came across this kind of issue when they are deploying the tools and so on in U.S. because everyone speaks English, so there is no problem. But when you speak in English in France or in Germany or in Poland, it's not the same what the people receives.
Yeah, so much of communication, I mean, obviously the words are important, but a lot of communication happens outside of the words too. So it's interesting. Just even in speaking English, like you said, the way that it's spoken in different cultures can sound differently, can come across differently.
And you need to recognize the differences.
So what are some of the industries that you've worked with, continuous improvement or lean or total quality management? You mentioned Whirlpool. Are there some others?
Yeah, Whirlpool. So home appliances, basically. This was, up to 2006. Then I joined Parker Hannifin in an Italian division making hoses, rubber hoses, for high pressure, low pressure, industrial application, hydraulics, and so on. And this was completely different business. So completely different manufacturing processes, completely different, organization, production, and so on. Mass production in both cases, because in Whirlpool, of course, millions of home appliances every year. And they're in Park and anything, millions of meter of hoses. But very complex. And this is where, mainly the maintenance, so TPM, important. So TPM, material flow, this is where you could make the difference. In Whirlpool, most of the benefits were coming from motions and cell design and so on. Over there, high level of equipment and so on, the focus were mainly in keep the machines running, OEE and so on and so on. So completely different, but still every machine or more machines were run by people, so you need to still work with people. So this is what is amazing anyway. So it was Parker Hannifin was very interesting because it's very structured, very determined to implement lean at all levels. So this is where I expanded and enlarged my experience in applying the tools and lean, particularly the A3 tool. So the problem solving techniques, because it was not only used for continuous improvement and problem solving in quality or other aspects of the business, but also for Oshinkani. So policy deployment, new investment and so on. Everything had to be, let's say, analyzed and justified and motivated by within A3. So showing the thought process to get to the point that we need investment or we need to change something. So this was a really an impressive experience. Also because I was at the beginning as a kind of business system manager. So I was in charge of Lean internal consultant, if you like. And later on, I took over also responsibility. I was a business unit manager. I was engineering manager. I was operations manager. I had also the pleasure to be in the leading side, implementing and driving these changes. So.
Dang. And then, so how long were you in that role there with Parker Hannifin?
Parker Hannifin, I was leaving Parker Hannifin beginning of 2020. And I was there for 14 years, basically, from 2006 to 2020. And 2020, I joined a small, medium-sized company, Italian company, always in the oats business, near Parma. The owner. So this was a family-owned company. The owner wanted to make a step change in the location, so in the production. So asked me to, he saw the plant I was responsible for in Italy, in Parker Hannifin, and he asked me to join his company and to take this transformation alive also in transfer oil. So I joined there. I was there for 3 years. This was my agreement with the owner saying, and I spent all my, let's say, knowledge and expertise in developing an engagement program for people based on continuous improvement and problem solving. So kind of self-managed teams approach, engaging the people in their, let's say, area of where they're working, creating the team improvement boards, where they are recording, tracking the KPIs, working on problem solving to improve performances over the time. So this was a nice exercise, interesting exercise experience. And then in 2023, almost three years ago, I decided to come back home. My family didn't move at that time. We were just entering into the COVID issue. So I was there in Parma, commuting on a weekly basis and so on. The family didn't move, so I wanted to rejoin the family. And the best option I had was consulting. So I said, let's do it.
In the consulting. Yeah. And in your consulting, do you work with all sizes of companies? I'm assuming that you probably got into some other industries as well.
I'm working with a consulting company, which are old friends of 2002. These guys were part of another consulting company and they created a new one of their own. So these are friends. I always maintain a relationship with them. So when I asked them if they were interested to me joining their organization, they said, yeah, please, tomorrow. So I said, no, let's wait a little bit and let me think about it. But in the end, I joined with them. So I'm mainly working with this company, which is based in Milan. It's not a big company, but is we are 5-6 people mainly, experienced in Lean, working on different businesses. Over the past 3 years, I worked on mechanical businesses, on leather production, on big machinery production, and so on. So really varying a lot. And this is another thing I like into the consultancy role, which I can see really many different applications and production and businesses.
That's one. That's also a pattern that I've seen with a lot of folks that have really made this a career is there's a lot of variety in the industries, but a lot of times the problem solving and the approaches are pretty similar. When you think about maybe in your consulting role, what do you look for? What type of companies do you work for, or maybe what kind of people do you like to work with now in those types of projects? What kind of projects are you guys working on?
I work with blue collars operators in the shop floor. But for example, I was leading a problem solving on quality topic in a interesting company in east of Italy, so not too far from Venice. After towards Udine, so in that area, and the problem was to reduce the quality issues in the production. So we created a very large A3. The A3 was open for 7 months, and we started to analyze with the people. So there were different level of the organization involved, from the manager, the engineering, the quality team, and the production team. So all together, analyzing the data, discussing, testing solutions, implementing, checking results, and so on. So this was, and I was coaching, let's say, them with the tool, the A3 tool, and the application. And mainly, they were driving the action plan, working on different activities once we decide anyway what to work, in which area to attack the issues. And we reduce for about 63% the failure rate at the end in 7 months. That was quite impressive.
Maybe you just gave me the answer to this next question, but
okay. Sorry.
Was there a particular KPI, key performance indicator, that you were focused on addressing with that 7 month long effort?
There was the defect rate at the final test of this equipment that were built. So they were producing the components, these large components, and then there was a test, final test, looking for leakages. The main technology linked to this production were related to welding. So there were part welding related to a continuous process in a oven. A part of the welding was manual, where people were involved, where material, different materials and so on, techniques, expertise. So these were the most difficult to grasp in the end. But for example, we reviewed a lot of the processes itself, the cleaning of the parts. We made tests. So I really love the Kata approach. I don't know, the Toyota Kata. Yeah, if you are familiar with this, so that asking the people to make experiments, propose experiments, make experiments, discuss, reflect, understand, and make some changes then in the process. So gradually these are helped a lot to review all the working instructions for the people, change some of the tools and the technique they were using to braze materials. We actually changed also one of the alloy used for the brazing, because doing the test, we saw big differences. So I said, okay, let's swap. And this was really providing a lot of good results as well. So, and the best thing you see is that the more we went on into the process and doing activities on, and the more people felt engaged, participated, promoted activities, proposed different things.
So this is very...
where I liked the jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun when you get to try some new things and see things that work. I'm curious if there's a story or an example that comes to mind with the different deployments and rollouts that you've done. Maybe there was some people that you were asked to work with who weren't fully on board with what you were trying to do, and maybe, you know, initially they weren't on board and then maybe they came around. I don't know if there's a story along those lines that you might want to share with us.
There can be many. And I think it's a common theme in all the implementations. So you have normally a people which is excited. So as me, when Lean was brought into the plan, I was so excited about Lean, and people which is rejecting. So change is normally something that people does not like a lot, because it's they grew up in a certain way. They are comfortable with what they are doing now. So when you come and say, guys, we have to change, this is normally not the best approach. So, and this is what I normally avoid. So I'm not I rarely go into a room and say, guys, scrap whatever you've done so far and restart something new. So I need to keep the people with me, and I need to have the people understanding the approach, because when, especially now, which I'm a consultant, so when I finished it, I'm done with the project, I'm stepping out. What is important for me is that the people understood what they've done, the way we did it, and they can go on by themselves. So this is what I think is important. Difficult to mention something that people, you said, it was many times I've seen people on board at the beginning, but mainly for politics reasons. They were showing interest and commitment, but just because their boss was there. And later on, I saw them not acting, not pushing or even stepping away from activities, always busy and so on. So this is something that is in the equation. And again, if I'm not able to engage them and bring them at the table, I try to work on other people with other people to get either him or his people working into the project. Of course, we have normally steering committees and reviews with the top management of the company. So then I normally report out the issues. And I had in the past, one of the reasons I moved between the companies was also because when I was lean program manager in Whirlpool, I reported to a vice president of manufacturing. And then there were many other VPs of the different technologies, refrigeration, washing, and so on, and cooking. And in the end, I realized I was fighting with them because they were trying to protect their plant managers. And I said, if I cannot share with you my problems, so I'm doing something you asked me to do, and if I cannot share with you my problems, with whom else I can raise the hand and say, guys, I have a problem. So then I decided to move into a company which were more, let's say, determined in implementing lean. Once you know lean, then your mind is set. So it's difficult then to move back to all the old ways or the way to come over or come around, let's say, issues, just to, let's say, do some window dressing. So I don't like that.
Yeah, it's sometimes when you get into this conversation about lean as a program or lean as a strategy or lean as a core value, a way of thinking, it could kind of be put into a bunch of these different ways. Have you ever found yourself in a situation where you were asked to like justify the ROI of the lean program?
Sure, every time.
What advice do you have for somebody who might be in a similar situation where they're saying, how do we justify?
If you get trapped into this, you are, let's say, done with the program, let's say, because unless you demonstrate the benefits in money, you are not, let's say, allowed to do anything. So that's why, for example, when top management is really engaged and motivated to implement lean, they are normally not really interested in the short term, because lean, if someone understood properly, lean knows this is a long-term strategy. So not a short term. Then you can do activities. You can go solve issues, improve, and normally you improve productivity, improve quality, improve all the KPIs, reduce inventory. But these are, in a large corporation especially, these are small. So in the end, it's difficult to say, we save thousands of euros or thousands of dollars and so on, millions and so on. I'm more interested in translating the doing the right thing, doing the basics, have most of the people understanding and applying lean, and in the end, results will come. Open the door one day and you will see your garden is full of flowers and everything. So if you do the properly preparation of the ground, and you put the seeds and you put the water systematically, you will see a nice garden then. So this is what I'm thinking. So I'm thinking that you need to promote, nurture, change the philosophy, change the way the people is doing it, in a way they understand the change, in a way they accept. Then the results is impressive. And I think Toyota can see the results they're getting is 60 years, 40, 60 years. Toyota is on this way. So,
yeah, it's quite impressive to follow those kind of results. So let's just say I was, a CEO or COO of a large manufacturing firm, and we were talking about lean, and you're a consultant, and, mm-hmm. and I'm saying, yeah, you know, we have people who've been in companies with a more formal lean program, but we don't really have a formal program, and we want to get more of that happening inside of our organization. And I came to you and I says, where should we start? You know, like, because I'm guessing like I can't just start with everybody all at once. We probably got to have like a staged approach or phased approach. Like, where would you want to ideally start?
Ideally, you need anyway to train and teach the top managers or the manager and the leadership team to understand that this is something they must do. It's not flavor of the month, it's not this year, it's not because now there is a boss which is pushing and I will do something later on, I will continue to do my stuff. So it's something they need to accept that is a transformation. And the most difficult message to pass is that is a transformation towards something which is not easy to describe on a paper. So I can put on a paper, you will see 5S, you will see shiny plants, you will see, and they will always say, okay, what can I do with shiny plants? So you have to share with them the point that this is a cultural change that the people then, if properly instructed and managed, it will be, everything will be different from what is today. So they will have to work on the system. I don't know if you have ever seen the, organogram, Toyota organogram. So
yeah, describe it for us. That'd be great.
Never seen. So is the opposite of what we see normally. You will see at the top, the CEO or CEOs, and then all the VPs and so on until the bottom line, which is normally people working on the line. In Toyota is the vice versa, is the opposite. So the top, there are the front line people, and then all the other staff and people and so on is below. And the real boss is at the bottom of this pyramid. And this is explaining because the management, and this is always, I have seen my role as a manager, is I need to help my team member, my people, in order to do their job. Because if they do the job, I do my job. So my support, my role is to help them to make less efforts, to work smoothly, no problems and so on. So I need to get into to jump into the team and so on when there is a problem. But if there is no problem, the team can run by itself. I should be invisible to the organization. So this is my learning after 20 years in leading and so on. So this is because my role is to develop the people. I will not be there forever. I will change companies. I will move and so on. So when I leave, I'd like that the people understood how to do the job autonomously and running the business autonomously. That's why I would start with the leaders to understand a big step change in their role. And not all the leaders like this because let's see, kind of diminishing role in becoming a support element instead of a leading element. But you're still leading, even if you're not in the first position. And on the other side, involve the teams that they learn and drive the car by themselves. Everyone runs the cars. They watch the cockpit and they understand how to regulate the speed, when to stop, so everyone knows, if understood the rules, everyone knows how to drive. So we need this. So we need to help the people to understand how to drive the car. And then we can sit in the back and define eventually the strategy. So we want to go there up to the mountains for the reason because this will be beneficial for the company. You drive, we tell you the way, but you drive, guys. And this is something, I think this is what I would suggest. So both working immediately with the leadership, of course, because they need to accept this, and with the people in the shop floor to start engaging them. Because engaging hundreds or thousands of people is not easy. So you need a lot of time to do this.
So I guess I would kind of summarize that. It sounds like a promise of more self-regulating teams, you know, teams that are kind of functioning. Yeah, that's that. I think that, and that could probably be, I don't know if intimidating is the right word for some leaders, but it can leave you in a position of wondering, okay, well, if my team doesn't need me, then what do I do? Funny how there's always something more to do, though.
Yeah, no, a recent project I was running last year, there was a simple project. So the manager asked me to do some 5S training in the shop floor and organize the things in a way he wanted. And I said, okay, let's do one asset at a time and let have the people start then to arrange the thing. And he was pushing back all the proposals from the team. And I said, in this way, you will not get anywhere because you are trying to push your idea of the shop floor, which may not be the right. The right one or the one that the people is able to understand. So that's why you should allow the people to do something they can for sure sustain because they did it. If you do something, you impose some solutions and the people doesn't understand or doesn't feel the right solution, they will never sustain this. So, and it's very important to do something and sustain what you have done.
Yeah. It's interesting how the term, the phrase continuous improvement, you know, sounds like it's happening all the time, but in reality, it still tends to seem to be kind of like a step function sort of thing, like, well, improvements. I'm curious if you have any best practices for how to ritualize that or celebrate that inside of a large company to share those, I guess, successes or wins of the program.
Well, there are different, I mean, in Parker, anything, there were a lot of, let's say, effort to share. There were, of course, a lean organization, which were supporting, let's say, each plant. So there was at the group level, at the division level. So there was a lean coordinator. And this is where, let's say, best practices were collected and shared within the different plants, even within the countries, which is much easier because when you have different divisions in the same country, but then you have a kind of virtual repository where you put all the best practices and you have people interacting with them and sharing. There was a lot of activities also in what was called the talent pool and talent development teams, where people from different locations gathered together and shared what they did actually in their locations. And this was a very good point. There was another interesting approach called the START program. START program was in Parker Hennepin, we had, let's say, take a plant, split in different cells or in different value streams and so on. In each cell, there was a team improvement board. And people from different team improvement boards were appointed with, let's say, hat for, let's say, 1 month or a few months. Let's say quality hat, safety hat, productivity hat. And these monthly were gathering together different cells, a responsible or speaking person for quality, sharing what they did in their area and so on. There and in similar businesses, the copy and paste opportunity is behind the corner, because if I'm running extruders in this plant and in another plant they're running extruders, if I do something on changeover, maybe 90% of what they've done is good also for me. So I can then quickly initiate a change and implement changes in the way I do changeover also in my plant. And these, if you count 10, 15 plants, the same way, it's immediately, let's say, I don't know, it's not a linear change, but it's a really steep change.
Yeah. It sounds, I've heard the term steering committees used for different themes, like you said, safety or
right.
All of it. Yeah, having people who are members of these committees that gather and circulate and share those, that definitely qualifies as a best practice. I think I heard you mention something along the lines of like daily huddles and what did you call the boards?
Team improvement boards.
Okay, team improvement boards. Yeah.
This was, again, is the basic of autonomous teams. And Parker was asking to deploy these in all the plants, splitting. I remember in the plant and in Italy here, the largest plants we had 13 team improvement boards.
Wow. Okay. Is that in one plant?
In one plant. And I was, this, my job was, I was moving around, talking to the people, asking why they were taking some action. And so we were, this is where I really enjoyed the part of the job I enjoyed.
This episode is brought to you by KPI Fire, the all-in-one platform for continuous improvement. With KPI Fire, you can align strategy, drive execution, and engage your people. So whether you're leading a team or driving enterprise-wide change, KPI Fire helps you deliver real results. Learn more at www.kpifire.com. So if you were, again, kind of staying in this, like, you know, we're talking about implementing lean and setting up this program inside the company, is there a mindset? Let's say we were talking about, we were going to put somebody into this role inside of the plant. And I said, hey, what, you know, what kind of person should I look for to say, hey, come be part of this special program that we're going to roll out? What are some of the mindset traits that you would, you know, that we would look for?
I would look for three things, let's say. Good teamwork capabilities. So people that can really be part of the team. I consider myself, also when I was ops manager in the shop floor, I consider myself as a team member, not the ops manager. I was there as a team member. So I was listening, I was proposing something, I was trying to stimulate the people to do some activity. So teamwork is definitely a key point. Together with empathy. So really, you need to be able to share and open up yourself with all the different people and with all the different kind of, feelings that people has over the days. Because there are people, sometimes it's Monday for each of us. Not everyone is happy. Your team didn't score on Sunday, so you are frustrated. Your wife was not happy, and so on and so on. So you need to understand this situation, and if you want to do something but the people is not, let's say, in the right mood and so on, you need to try to talk to them, understand and convince any way to do some activities on top of what they have. I remember when I was visiting Whirlpool plant in Brazil, I was very interesting. It was into the shop floor. In each area there were all the pictures of the team members working in that area. And every member, when they were coming in, every morning they had to put a magnet. They had three colors, red, green, and yellow. So green, I'm okay, I'm fine, no problems. Red, I'm upset, I'm not feeling good, and so on. And yellow, stay away from me for a while. No? And this was given immediately to the supervisor, some kind of situation of the shop floor. And the guy was going then to talk to this guy. So what's going on? What's the problem? And so on and so on. Trying to change these, say, the feelings or to feel them part of the family. So, and this was one of the visual I was quite impressed to see implemented. Not common, let's say. Brazil is different.
So that's like a self-reporting. Like I come in that day
exactly.
And I can say, I'm good, no issues. Or, hey, something's not going well.
Exactly.
Come see me. I like that.
Exactly. And it's the only plan when I saw these, you know, when I think then privacy and all this stuff came in. So probably they removed. But when I was there, I was really impressed about this board.
I think also
in IKEA, I think. So when I was visiting IKEA, one of the IKEA stores, in the back, all the pictures of the team and the team as well, putting some green and red and so on it.
That's one of the things I find so interesting about this discipline is just how many different ways there are to do good things, to do right things. And those same things don't work in every situation, you know, but the more of those that you see, the easier it is to say, yeah, well, if we combine this with that, it would work for us.
Correct.
And so seeing a lot of those practices shared and hearing a lot of the way things are done, hopefully somebody listened to our podcast today. We'll get a little idea from something that you've said and be like, yeah, we could apply that, you know, where we're going.
Yeah. And the third thing that I'd like to see in the people to put into the role is the ability to delegate, to let the people go, to give them responsibility and trust. So, which you can read in respect for people. So I respect, and you can make it. Even if you are making one small step instead of a large step, I believe you can make it. So go.
That's a really good one. That's a really good one, because it does require a certain amount of respect for people to take the things and run with them. That's a very good one. Well, let's shift just a little bit into the future of continuous improvement. I know a lot of people are talking about AI and AI taking over all the jobs. What do you think the future looks like for somebody who is trained in this discipline of continuous improvement or lean?
Well, talking about AI, I mean, AI can be a tool to support, let's say, in the continuous improvement. It could be a tool to support the analysis of data, highlighting the main drivers of problems and so on. So it could speed up a little bit the process of understanding the current state. Eventually put together a decent root cause analysis. But when you come to countermeasures and implementations and so on, then I see that still the people is not going, you cannot replace the people. So as I read already somewhere that robots and so on can do the job, but if you teach them to do the job, they can do it. They cannot invent the job by themselves. So when you come to countermeasure, to say thinking outside of the box, I think that algorithms and math can have some limits. So the human brain is still powerful, especially applying fantasy. So, or as I said, something I saw in a store, if we apply this, we can use it. And then the tests, making experiments, try and error, learning, reflecting. So these are all things that is still part of the human.
Absolutely.
So.
Very good. That's great. It's a great answer. Okay, Luca, this little section here I call the quick fire. These are just, you know, short phrase, short sentence, short question.
Okay.
Basically, the most important job of a leader is to blank.
Develop people, develop members.
Is there a book or a learning resource that you would like to recommend to people as a resource for learning this discipline?
Toyota Kata. This is the Mike Rother. This is the best book I came across recently.
Okay.
And then my favorite is definitely Managing to Learn from John Shook.
John Shook, Managing to Learn. That's great.
Three, so this is.
Along that same theme, are there some thought leaders or mentors that you want to give credit to? You've already mentioned a couple of names, so this is maybe a chance to restate some of those.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think always trying to get to the source is the best way. So Taichi Ono is definitely the reference in this area, in the lean area at least. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing correctly. There is a person in LinkedIn I'm following, Ide Hoba, which is interesting because all these posts is analyzing real words, the way they were written in Japanese from Taichi. And so the right significance of the words, the meaning of each words that he used. And not always are the one that has been translated into the books. So I would say this guy, John Shook, for sure. Jeffrey Licker, which wrote Toyota Way and so on, the 14 Principles. This is someone I'm following as well. So every time there is a post, I'm reading Tracy Richardson, which was a trainer in Toyota as well. So I'm trying also to go to the source, also in Toyota. I was able to visit a plant back in time. In Poland, a Toyota plant. And this was one of the aha moments. So when you see, you read the book while walking on the aisles, all the Kanban cars moving, all the people gathering together, working, 5S, perfect 5S.
That's wonderful.
It was a book.
Okay. Okay. Do you have a favorite go-to problem-solving tool from the Lean Toolbox?
Ishikawa diagram.
Ishikawa diagram. I love those.
This is
fishbone diagram. Favorite.
This for me is a living document. So I'm starting at a certain point to populate the fishbone diagram. And until I'm done closing the project, I always review, change, modify, restate, and so on. So it's a living document. It's, let's say, accompanying me all over the A3.
That's probably a great one to help you get at what is the problem.
Yeah.
Like, what is the problem we're trying to solve? I know I've...
This is the most difficult to start. And normally you end up somewhere else where was the initial idea.
It's funny how hard that can be to keep focused on. Now, what is the, because you get, you know, sometimes people get talking about solutions so much that you're like, well, what is the problem that we're trying to solve?
That's very correct. That's the fundamentals. I'm also a mentor for students at the Polytechnic of Milan on A3 implementation. This is a great opportunity for me to shape the mindset of future leaders as well.
What is it about the A3, if you could just give a short commercial for why somebody would be interested in that? What is it that makes the A3 your...
My favorite tool?
Yeah.
Is the concept itself of the A3. So the A3 is basically in one piece of paper with an A3 dimension. You summarize everything you understood about what you want to solve, which is the current condition, what's the target you want to achieve, what is the causes that are not allowing you to achieve the target, which are the countermeasures. And it's, in my opinion, very, very impressive how a simple tool like this can be used then to share with other people around the plant. So when you have an A3 in your hands, which is most likely should be very visual as a content, even if it's written in Japanese, some words, I can understand a Pareto chart, I can understand a diagram, I can understand a root cause analysis, and I can see the thought process that brought the team to identify some countermeasures. And then I can see the follow-up. So how is the metric, the KPI I wanted to address is moving along the time. So this is where I see the real power of this tool.
That's an interesting concept that you just said there, like knowing the visual structure of the information, even if it wasn't a different language, you kind of know what you're looking at, right?
Exactly.
So that's an interesting, I hadn't really thought of it like that.
This is one of the power of the A3. And then the fact that it's done is a teamwork. So that's why I'm always rejecting people which is doing the A3 in their other desk in front of a computer. No. You have to do outside with the team, involve the guys, and gather all the feedback and so on.
So good. Okay, last one of the short answer. Finish this sentence. Continuous improvement is?
Okay. Well, I think it's a basic attitude like drinking water or eating food to live.
Necessary for life, huh?
Exactly. Humans are naturally set to with the improvement attitude. So we were born with this attitude inside. So we discovered the fire, we invented the wheel. So I think because we wanted to improve our life and so on. So I think this is really something which is something we have, every one of us has inside. We just need to take out and put together and share with the rest of the team and the organizations.
I think that's so true. It's like letting the human spirit kind of do its magic.
Right, exactly. And there are no AI that can do anything than this.
It's true. Thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. We really appreciate your time and your experience. And for anybody listening, if you'd like to suggest a guest or ask a question or give us any ideas for episodes or context, please reach out to me. You can find me on LinkedIn, Keith Norris. Luca, I suppose, is LinkedIn the best way to find you as well?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Do you want to spell your last name for us?
Last name is GUADAGNUOLO. Guadagnuolo.
Guadagnuolo. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us here today. And this
thank you very much for this opportunity. Yeah.
You bet.
It's been a pleasure.
This concludes this episode of KPI Fireside, a continuous improvement podcast. If you have enjoyed today's episode, be sure to follow us on the socials, give a little comment. You can share this podcast with friends or colleagues who are as passionate about as continuous improvement as you are. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. And until next time, keep driving progress and sparking change.